Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we'll take you into the Department of Agriculture for a conversation on how President Donald Trump's agriculture agenda has been advanced this year. Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Baden will join us to discuss an awaiting economic assistance package, trade, and beef prices. To begin, farmers finished this growing season with mounting concerns about the farm economy, rising input costs, loss of markets, and falling crop prices. We asked Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Baden what he's hearing during visits across the U.S. and how he views the farm economy right now.
Well, my view of the farm economy is that we're trying to get up to speed after treading water for the past 4 years. There's been a tremendous focus on trade this year. But what's important to remember is that for the prior 4 years, it was the policy that there would be no new trade agreements. So we are literally taking off from a dead stop and trying to get up to speed. That takes time, but I'm glad as we've gotten into the third and fourth quarter of this year that we now have wins on the board. We've got China. We've got those countries in Southeast Asia like Cambodia, Thailand, and Vietnam. We've got completely new markets like Uzbekistan. And we're busting down trade barriers in Central and South America. And all of this, when added on top of the China baseline, is new demand for American agricultural goods. So going into 2026, I see us having momentum beginning to build up as we rise from the dead stop of the past 4 years.
And there's still generally, you know, pretty strong support from farmers for the administration's trade policy, but tariffs have raised input costs and, you know, really impacted crop prices. Secretary Rollins calls it a complete realignment of the world economy, and in September said the golden age for American farmers is around the corner. I mean, when should farmers expect this, you know, the golden age for this all to come around?
Well, first, it's important to remember the president has removed tariffs on many agricultural inputs now that he has these new trade frameworks and trade deals in place, most notably on fertilizer. Farmers are seeing that immediately. Second, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act is something that's long overdue, and it kicks in October of 2026. We've got reference prices that actually reflect the raised cost of production caused by the past 4 years of inflation. And for the first time ever, producers will not have to elect between ARC and PLC for next year. We'll do the calculation for them, and whichever winds up being the greatest benefit to their bottom line is what we will pay them. What we're focusing on now is building a bridge, as I first said at the Farm Progress Show back in Illinois this summer, to get them to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act start date next year.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit more about that bridge. I mean, Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says that an economic assistance package could be due next week. You know, I'm curious, what can you tell us about the size and scope of that package?
Well, it's been publicly reported we've set aside funds. We've set aside all that we can do here within our current authorities without additional help from Congress in order to try to take care of the harms that have built up over the past several years in farm country. We know that we've got Chinese now buying soybeans, but we know that soybean farmers suffered until that deal was worked out. But we also know there are non-trade related harms, at least non-China trade related harms, affecting other commodities like cotton, for example. And we need to take that into account as we think about the numbers that we need to be providing to farm country with the monies we have available. Fortunately, all of our USDA employees, those computations are wrapping up, and as the Secretary has noted, we will soon be announcing the program and how producers can look forward to it in the new year.
And Chairman Thompson confirmed to our team this morning, actually, you know, that would include, you know, tariff-related losses, but also losses for, you know, lower crop prices this year. You know, which farmers could benefit from this package?
I think it's going to be a wide scope of farmers because, unfortunately, with lower commodity prices, that's affecting things across the board. And it's not all trade related. For example, I want to go back to soybeans since that has been a primary focus of so many in the non-ag news media over the past year. If you look at the price per bushel of soybeans before the China trade deal was announced and compare that to the price per bushel that it was in 2024, you'll see almost no difference. We're talking a few cents. So the overall effect on American agriculture with regards to low prices, it's not solely a trade phenomenon. It's not primarily necessarily a trade phenomenon, particularly not with China. We've got a supply and demand imbalance, and that's what we've got to work out, because currently we've got a lot of supply because God has blessed this country with a great bounty and all of our farmers with it. I know that many of our corn and soybean and even cotton farmers have had some of their best crops that they've ever seen. And we've got to find buyers both internationally and domestically for that bounty.
And I want to dive a little bit more into this aid package before we move on to more of those broad trade questions. But you mentioned those soybean growers and some of those row crops. But, you know, will this payment package be strictly for row crops, or is there an opportunity for forestry, alfalfa, specialty crop growers to be included in that as well?
We've certainly heard from the specialty crop community. As you know, with the non-large commodity crops, that's a more difficult calculation. You even saw that with some of the disaster relief programs that Congress created that we paid out over the summer and are continuing to pay out. Our supplemental disaster relief program, phases one and two, the calculations for the specialty crops were a little more complicated than they were for the row crops. That's some of what we're dealing with. I'll leave it to the Secretary to announce the details.
And you've previously said that the aid package will account for recent increases in commodity prices, but Senate Ag Chairman John Bozeman told our team this week that the administration should be cautious about, you know, major recalculations based on the latest price movements. I mean, how are you addressing those concerns and collaborating with Congress to establish this package?
I've spoken with Chairman Thompson just last week. As a matter of fact, the day before Thanksgiving, many of his subcommittee chairmen. I've also spoken with Chairman Bozeman's staff, the great Fitzhugh Elder. We've been definitely keeping them in the loop. We've been hearing their feedback. We've been sharing with them what we're thinking. It's been a good collaboration, and I think they'll see their input was taken into account.
Okay, and originally there'd been kind of a $12 billion price tag floated on that. Is that still potentially what will be in this aid package?
How it gets divided up between what commodities, that's obviously what the announcement's going to be. But we set aside that money for a reason, and it's our intent to use it.
Some lawmakers say that this USDA package, you know, still might not be enough. I mean, that a second aid package might be likely needed too. I mean, do you think that Congress could need to pass a second aid package after what will be expected next week from USDA?
Obviously, if Congress passes a program, we'll be happy to work with them on it, provide whatever technical assistance is needed, and administer it in Trump time. But right now, we only have these authorities and the monies provided by the Commodity Credit Corporation, so that's what we're focusing on. Because we know that come October of 2026, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which is thankfully permanent law with regard to these key changes it has made to farm programs and that have been needed for some time, it kicks in.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. China paused many ag purchases this year in retaliation for tariffs imposed by the U.S. But the new trade deal requires a purchase commitment of 12 million tons this year and 25 million tons annually for the next 3 years. These purchase amounts are still lower than before the Phase 1 deal. We asked Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Baden if the commitments in the China deal are enough.
First, it sets a baseline. These are minimum purchase commitments. They're not a ceiling. They're free to go over that. Second, it reflects roughly on average what was done during the previous 4 years. So in terms of overall change in demand, it reflects a baseline on which we're building with the other trade agreements that I mentioned, like in Southeast Asia, like with Uzbekistan of all places, like with Japan. These ancillary trade agreements that are in addition to the China one that's been so many people's primary focus, this represents new demand. And I want to emphasize, it's not limited to row crops. One of the biggest barriers that we face in American agriculture are the European Union's effort through geographic indicators to box out so many of our products because they want to essentially try to get a monopoly on a name. Everybody knows what Parmesan cheese is. Everybody knows what champagne is. The European Union thinks they're the only people who can use those terms. And when American producers make those products and want to sell them overseas, they don't want to have to deal with the competition. One of the things that I am happiest to see is that Jameson Greer, when he was in Southeast Asia, when he's been dealing with these countries in our own hemisphere, he is for the first time successfully knocking down these non-tariff trade barriers, like the European Union's effort to essentially keep you from calling a common name, and they're falling, and countries are agreeing to that, and that's providing us new market access. That is at least as important in the long run as some of these tariff trade barriers that are being broken down are. And I'm happy to see it's a full court press on ag.
I mean, even if China, though, you know, like to circle back, but even if China fulfills the agreement recently announced by the Trump administration, farmers have still lost, you know, half of their normal exports to China this year. I mean, how do they, you mentioned some of those other trade agreements, but catch up, fulfill that, send product elsewhere?
Well, let's take soybeans. If I look at the price of soybeans right now, it's popped more than a dollar from what it was in 2024. We're setting on highs of between 15 or 18 months, depending on what particular day you're looking at. This is because of more secure demand, a trade agreement that the market knows the president will be around for 3 years to enforce, and they know we're actually engaged in trade discussions as opposed to the previous 4 years when there were literally no discussions. That's the difference. That's why the soybean price has stayed up above $11 and it's sustained that momentum. And it's going to continue to have momentum because this administration will see to it that China keeps its word. And if it doesn't, there will be consequences.
I'd like to pivot to the government shutdown. You know, some reports are still being released to catch up after the shutdown, and payments through programs like CRP were recently halted during that. You know, what operations and programs at USDA are you still watching that need to catch up from that very long pause?
Well, thanks to needless politics by the minority on Capitol Hill, most of this wonderful department, a majority of all our employees, were furloughed. That included much of the key staff in the Research, Education, and Economics Division, which produces the data on which farmers rely. That was needless, it was stupid, it was self-harming, and the minority should have never done that. But I am grateful that as part of the compromise that Congress reached, with the exception of our Forest Service, which unfortunately must ride on Interior's appropriation bill, the rest of this department has full year funding. Whatever happens in January, and in particular with regard to these reports, we've got funding through the end of the fiscal year. They're going to catch up and we'll get back on track. And we're once again issuing the flash trade reports that the market depends on, and we'll get the data out.
You know, you've canceled or delayed a number of important reports. The farm income forecast this week, for example, delayed. You know, I'm curious, hasn't, you know, the loss of personnel this year, has that impacted the delay of those reports as well? Many of those economic reports?
No, what's impacted this is for the nearly a month and a half, we were shut down. We legally could not work on that. If we don't have appropriations, we can't have the employees here to work on it.
We'll be back with more from Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Baden right after this.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Join us as we celebrate three decades of Commodity Classic, agriculture's largest farmer-led event, February 25th through 27th. Experience game-changing solutions. Connect with thousands of forward-thinking farmers and explore innovations from over 400 companies, all focused on powering your farm forward with efficiency and profitability. Housing and registration opens November 6th. Don't miss 30 years of agricultural excellence in the heart of Texas.
Welcome back. The high price of beef has been a major concern for President Trump, while the cattle sector has been one of the real bright spots in the farm economy this year. We asked Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Baden how beef prices can be lowered without also cutting cattle prices and farm income.
What's important is that if we're going to have a healthy supply chain, everybody along that chain needs to be making a little profit, and the consumer needs to be able to pay a price that he or she can afford to pay for a product that they want to buy. And right now, we are seeing the pendulum swing to the extreme of the other side. If you and I were sitting here talking 3 years ago, we'd be talking about the exact opposite circumstance in the cattle market. We'd have farmers who were hemorrhaging money, we'd have the packers who were making money hand over fist, and people would be screaming about that. Now we have the opposite side of the situation because, responding to the extreme situation of a few years ago, cattle producers followed the economic signals, they cut back on their herd size, and now we're seeing the results of that on the other side. What we've got to do is we've got to have a policy like that Secretary Rollins announced to help make those pendulum swings not be the boom-bust cycle that we're currently going through, the boom and the bust, depending on which side of the equation that you're on. We need to have a steady supply of American beef. We need to make certain that the grazing lands, including public lands controlled by USDA and the Department of Interior, are available to grow the herd size. We need to get the government out of the way, and we need to ensure that where we end up is at some point closer to equilibrium, where, as I said, all three parts of the supply chain, the farmer, the packer, the grocery store, they're all making a little bit of money, and the consumer is benefiting as well with the price that they can afford to pay.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the consolidation in the beef industry, those packers. You know, what is the administration prepared to do about consolidation in beef processing? I mean, that's been a concern of administrations of both parties.
Well, let me step back, because there's been so much focus on beef. Protein includes more than just beef. Apologies to our cattle producers, no insult mentioned. But we've got poultry and we've got swine as well. I don't want to forget that. There's a reason why I'm taking us back to that broader perspective. When I look at the situation in beef right now, what I see is, as I mentioned a few moments ago, you've got a major company, Tyson, that has shut down an entire plant and put 3,100 people out of work. They've closed another line in Amarillo, Texas, and gone down to one shift, putting another 1,700 people or so out of work. This is because they've been losing money on it. One of the reasons why they're losing money is because grocery stores are using their own market power to help the consumer and saying, we're not going to allow you to fully pass along to us and force us to pass along to the consumer the even higher price of beef that you're paying to the farmer. Now, that's pro-consumer, and that's good, but it doesn't necessarily paint a picture of a huge problem in beef. But when we go to the other sectors of it, like poultry and swine, and I, as a lawyer, take a look at what's happened in the federal courts over the last 5 years, I can find more than one lawsuit where there has either been a settlement or there has been a finding by a federal court that an antitrust violation has occurred in poultry. And we've seen some amazing things. Companies like Walmart, not your typical plaintiff, filing antitrust claims against some of these companies. I think it's reasonable for the secretary and the president to want to take a second look to make certain that some of those illegalities that were found in prior actions don't continue themselves in all three sectors of the protein industry, and at the same time work toward that happy median that I mentioned earlier, where we're trying to get out of the boom and bust cycle and see to it that we can stay near the center where all three sides are making a respectable profit and the consumer's treated fairly as well.
And on the topic of cattle, the border remains closed to Mexican cattle because of New World screwworm. I mean, how long will the border stay closed? What are you watching for to potentially reopen it?
We're watching to ensure that there's not going to be a threat to the American cattle herd. You know the one thing that'll make beef prices go higher? It's if we have a New World screwworm infection. We eradicated that pest 60 years ago. We don't want it back. The president secured the border from illegal immigration. We don't want this fly immigrating over here. So we're working closely with our Mexican counterparts. Both the secretary and I have met with her Mexican counterpart. We've been very plain to them. We've got people on the ground from our Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. We're not just trusting, we're verifying. And we're wanting to make certain that all of the protocols that both of us have agreed to on a voluntary basis are being followed. When we can be assured that the risk to the American cattle herd has reduced to an acceptable level, then we can talk about, in a staged manner, having a partial border reopening.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after the break.
think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable? They'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. The USDA oversaw broad downsizing earlier this year. We asked Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Baden if the department is now running more efficiently.
So we're committed to putting into place Secretary Rollins' memorandum. She has delegated to me the ability to do that. You can expect us to march forward through next year and get USDA not so much right-sized, as we did a lot of that through the deferred resignation program and voluntary decisions through our employees. We focused on voluntary decisions, not reductions in force, but to get us in the right place, and the right place not just now and for the future. So when you and I talk at the end of next year, what you and I will be talking about, I think at least in part, is that we'll be in Raleigh, North Carolina, we'll be in Indiana, we'll be in Kansas City, Missouri, Fort Collins, Colorado, and Salt Lake City, Utah. We will have redistributed the majority of our USDA employees to our new hub locations, plus other places where we already have leased office space.
You'd like them already to be moved to those locations by the end of 2026?
They will be. As a matter of fact, we're already moving to implement that. And you'll see that in the days and weeks ahead with public announcements. And I would encourage anyone who wants to know what we're doing, we're being very transparent. We have a website up where anyone, news media, USDA employee, member of the general public, you want to know where we are in our reorganization, what our latest announcement is, what we've done, we update that on a regular basis with where we are, the documents that support what we're doing, answers to questions, and there'll be more information posted there in the not too distant future about the comments that we have received and what our responses are to them, including through our tribal consultation. So we're being very transparent, but the future of USDA is in the field because there's no rule here in Washington, D.C., and that's where our employees need to be. And if we're going to stay within our budget, that's where they have to be, because it's absolutely unacceptable that if you are a government employee, you want to start a career with us here at USDA, but you also want to have a family and a backyard, you're doing an hour commute one way each way. There are not a lot of people who want to do that for 10, 20, or more years. That's how long I want them here. And so in order to see to it that we can have those multi-decade employees and the American public can build on the experience that they are able to have on their behalf, we got to put them in places where they can afford to have a family and where the government salary will allow them to live the American dream. And unfortunately, that's not Washington, D.C. anymore, but that is our five hub locations. And so that's where we're going there.
And you mentioned you've kind of taken charge of reorganization. I mean, historically, the Deputy Ag Secretary role has kind of operated like a chief operating officer role. I mean, how would you describe, you know, your day-to-day responsibilities and how this role has kind of, you know, shaped to your strengths?
Well, in the Trump administration, we expect everybody to be able to do what's needed. Titles aren't so much important as ability. I'm grateful to work for Secretary Rollins. I'm grateful that she has trust in me and that she allows me to help her, whether it be on the operations of the department, whether it be as she's delegated the reorganization to me, or helping out on policy matters or messaging like we're doing here today.
We'll be back with a look at the week ahead right after this.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Join us as we celebrate three decades of Commodity Classic, agriculture's largest farmer-led event, February 25th through 27th. Experience game-changing solutions. Connect with thousands of forward-thinking farmers and explore innovations from over 400 companies, all focused on powering your farm forward with efficiency and profitability. Housing and registration opens November 6th. Don't miss 30 years of agricultural excellence in the heart of Texas.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Next week, the House Ag Committee will hold Member Day on Wednesday. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins has teased an aid package for farmers that will be announced next week. Tune in next week and check our website anytime for the latest developments on all things food, farm, and fuel policy. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.